a roundup of the main business news from China and elsewhere. This is Global Business.
From CGTN headquarters here in Beijing, this is Global Business. I'm Javon Lindbergh. Coming up on the program. Property trends, new home prices in 70 major Chinese cities exhibit a narrower month-on-month decline in February this year. Financial support, China's central bank strengthens banking system with fresh liquidity through reverse ripples and medium-term lending facility. Cost pressures. U.S. producer prices surged in February, prompting concerns of prolonged high interest rates. Housing prices in major Chinese cities experienced a decrease in February with narrowed month-on-month declines, according to the National Bureau of Statistics. Compared to a year ago, prices in the 70 large and medium-sized cities in general saw price drops due to a high base. First-tier cities' new home prices fell by 1%. However, the changes varied among individual cities. For instance, Beijing and Shanghai saw increases of 1% and 4.2% respectively, while Guangzhou and Shenzhen experienced a decline of over 4% in terms of new home prices. Second- and third-tier cities also observed falling new home prices compared to the previous year. On a monthly basis, all tiers of cities reported a slight decline in new home prices. China's second-hand housing market has experienced a resurgence in many cities due to easing policies and rising market expectations. Hangzhou, the capital of Zhejiang Province, recently announced a new policy that fully cancels the purchase limitations on second-hand houses, injecting more vitality into the market. Additionally, first-tier cities such as Beijing, Shanghai, and Shenzhen have witnessed a rebounding trend with increased transaction volumes and notable growth in market activity. Beijing's second-hand house transaction volume rose during the first two weekends of this month, while in Shanghai, the daily average transaction volume of second-hand houses rose over twofold in March on a monthly basis. Shenzhen's weekly transaction volume hit over 1,000 units in the first week of March, up 14% on a monthly basis. Now, for more discussions on China's housing market, let's bring Liu Zhiqin, senior fellow at the Chongyang Institute for Financial Studies of Renmin University of China. Professor Liu, good to see you. So first of all, how shall we interpret the latest monthly report data on housing prices? And what insights does it provide about the current state and future direction of China's housing market? Are we seeing a rebound? How is this year's outlook looking like?
I think that the data monthly shows quite an interesting point. I think this point we have already discussed several months ago. I said even the central government has issued a series of positive policies to support the recovery of the housing market in China. But as we know that China's market and the consumers are needing that more time to digest all these policies. Now, it takes time. So already 6 months, in my opinion, already passed. Now the market has now a reaction in February. That means the market is getting warmer, not hot, but getting warmer. It's not so cold as before because the before months that the market is still very worse. Now in February, it's trying to get in warm, shows that the spring of the housing market is slowly come back with cautions. Now I will see that the price in the first tier cities and the second tier cities that shows a little bit the reluctant increasing. The increasing compared to the drop of the price because the drop is getting narrow. That means in opposite is the increasing of the price is getting better. So this trend is still positive. As we know that we still need more time to see and to digest this policy, especially for those new buyers. They have to see what any other new positive policy could be come out from the market. So they're waiting a little bit more supportive policies and positive policies to encourage them to buy new houses. Whether they should buy these new houses will depend on the market situation and also on the new policy issued, that whether they are in favor of this new buyers.
So do you think this slight rebound in, let's say, market activity or amount of people looking at houses, is it due to, like you mentioned a couple months ago, there have been some relaxation in property curbs, or is it just seasonal factors? And also, do you think if the government continues to loosen these property curbs, do you think these measures will actually be effective in supporting or boosting people's enthusiasm in the property market?
That's a good question, because we know that the people are having that enthusiasm, but that they are still very afraid of something that hidden this policy. Even yesterday and that before, I had some discussion with the young people. They asked me whether they should buy the house in good time or in the right time. I said, yeah, it's difficult to tell you whether it's a good time or it's the right time to buy a house. It depends on whether you need this house immediately. If you can wait, if we have more money to be saved, that you can still wait. But it depends on your own demand. It is very important. And secondly, I said from long run that the government will have more supportive policies. And the market outbound can be expected, but not within short time. It needs at least 1 year or even longer than 1 year to get all this housing market boosted. Because as I mentioned, that now the housing market in China is getting warm, but just because of not too cold before. Now it's trying to get something that in movement or more activities. So in this way, it didn't show any greater potential of the buyers or enthusiasm to buy more houses. But at the moment, still a good positive trend that for the market to see in the near future, this recovery will still coming, even with the slow pace, with some reluctant waiting and see a chance, but still in the right direction that to boost these new buyers in the market. So I hope to, along with the urbanization, I think the housing market could be further developed, and also the central government should really do its best to push this market in a short time, not to wait too long time.
Let's continue to talk a little bit about the property curbs. Like first-tier cities like Beijing and Shanghai, the government has loosened a little bit on the property curbs, but there's still a lot of restrictions in place. Do you think they still have a lot of tools in their pocket to further loosen these curbs to boost the market, and will they be effective?
Yeah, that's why I didn't give you the definite answer whether the government will lose its restrictions for the market. Yeah. Actually, from government itself, if you ask them whether they have more loosening policy, they will say yes. But in fact, they will consider the real interest of the local government, what they can get, what they can achieve from this loosening policy's action. So in this way, this is a contradiction between demand and also the interest partners, how to make a good balance. I think at the moment, in my opinion, the balance point is still not coming. So I think from the government itself and from the market, the buyers, they are trying to come to the middle point to find a balance point, whether this market could be satisfied to both sides, to the government needs, also to the market needs. So I think in the near future, this market will be getting in a positive way. So the trend is positive, but we still need a longer patience and more policies.
Yeah. All right. Thank you so much for your insights. Do stay with us for more discussions later in the program. Now, home buying in Hong Kong is on the rise after the lifting of tightening measures announced. There has been an increase in activity in both the secondhand as well as new home markets. As Patrick Falk reports, developers and buyers appear to be capitalizing on the changes aimed at boosting the real estate sector.
With its seaside surroundings and lush green mountain views, it's easy to see why Hong Kong's south side is one of the city's most desirable areas to live. It boasts some of the highest-end properties Hong Kong has to offer.
My best guess is that they have been waiting, right? And, you know, it's a smart move, it's a smart strategy, right? Because the market environment should be more favorable now.
The Hong Kong government took major steps to restore vigor to the housing market by removing all additional levies on home buying imposed a decade ago, designed at the time to cool red-hot demand. That includes the scrapping of combined stamp duty of 15% for non-residents when purchasing property and extra duties on owners who sold within 2 years of buying a home.
Now that it's all been taken away, that pent-up demand, we see it driving additional transactions, and we think over the next 12 months, the number of monthly transactions is probably going to be closer to 5K.
Property platform Spacious says it's seen a 57% increase in sales inquiries in the days since the new measures were announced. It follows a nine-month-long losing streak for the real estate industry. And the government's home price index fell by 23% in January from a peak set in September 2021.
Here at Henderson Land's Belgravia Place project in Kowloon, all 138 units on offer were snapped up by buyers within 4 hours of going up for sale. And in an indication of an immediate pickup in the market, the units were 31 times oversubscribed.
Still, analysts say the medium-term outlook for property in Hong Kong could be challenging. High interest rates in particular are likely to put a cap on any sector recovery for the foreseeable future. But any boost to the industry will have a positive effect on the economy and can also help lift Hong Kong's struggling equities market.
So, of course, there are a lot of factors that affect the stock market, including investor confidence, external factors. We think the budget, if it stimulates the economy, should have a positive impact on the stock market in the long run. I'm hoping that the shape of recovery is sustainable. We're not looking for a short-term rebound, but we're looking for sustainable growth in the Hong Kong economy.
Hong Kong's property sector accounts for 8.5% of its GDP, and if the momentum in sales continues, it puts the city in a firmer position to get economic growth back on track. Patrick Falk, CGTN, Hong Kong.
Now to talk more about the housing market in Hong Kong, let's bring back our guest Liu Jitian, Senior Fellow at the Chung-Yang Institute for Financial Studies of Renmin University of China. So is the recent minor upswing observed in Hong Kong's real estate market sustainable? And what critical factors will determine its future trajectory?
Yes, I call this increasing or improvement of the housing market in Hong Kong as an upstairs movement. Even we find this movement is quite slow, but it's very great, very essential and critical for the Hong Kong housing market in the future. It shows that the 2 points that firstly, the confidence of the market is coming back because I think the Hong Kong government has reiterated all this negative measures that they control restrain the market development in the past years. Now, I say that the market in Hong Kong is liberated, is liberalized for the people that have more free choice. So this is the basic enthusiasm that of the Hong Kong buyers. That's why we say the confidence is come back. And the second, from the Hong Kong itself, these advantages, for instance, they attract more talented people from outside Hong Kong, from mainland or from overseas, that they have more policies to give these new talented people more support, especially in the accommodation, in the housing market, to give subsidies or other favorable conditions to attract these people. This is also one factor that can improve the housing market in Hong Kong. And the third, of course, all these residents and visitors from mainland, that they are very eager to buy some houses and real estate in Hong Kong because they have been waiting also for almost 10 years till the good time to buy it. So all these three factors combined together will have more momentum that for the Hong Kong housing market to get a booster in a short time. So this is what we should learn from mainland administration, how to make all this market restriction in a short time, in an immediate effect to lift up all these bans and the controls that to give more freedom to the market. This is a very important and fundamental condition for further development, not only in Hong Kong, but also in mainland the housing market.
All right. Thank you so much for your insights. Really appreciate your time. Liu Zhixian, Senior Fellow at the Chongyang Institute for Financial Studies at Renmin University of China.
The world economy as we know it is about to change. Global business reports highlight emerging markets, developing countries, and dynamic sectors worldwide. We feature top analysts and newsmakers to provide perspectives on every facet of business. From an on-the-ground perspective, we provide you with balanced and objective assessments. Fast, sharp, and insightful. Global business. Only on CGTN.
China's central bank, the People's Bank of China, injected 400 billion yuan, or more than 55 billion US dollars worth of liquidity into the banking system on Friday to quote-unquote fully satisfy the needs of financial institutions. A significant portion of this liquidity was provided through the PBOC's medium-term lending facility, which enables banks to borrow from the central bank using securities as collateral. The remainder of the liquidity was infused through 7-day reverse ripples, a process in which the central bank purchases securities from commercial banks through bidding, with an agreement to sell them back in the future. China's securities regulator has announced plans to intensify oversight of initial public offerings and combat financial fraud. China Securities Regulatory Commission, or CSRC, released 4 regulatory documents on Friday outlining a series of measures to strengthen supervision of listed companies, securities brokers, public funds, and self-discipline. The CSRC has instructed all regulatory bodies to enhance the scrutiny of IPO applications to uphold the quality of listed firms from the outset. Emphasizing the role of financial intermediaries as gatekeepers to the financial market, the CSRC has urged them to bolster internal controls over the protection of investors' interests. Additionally, the CSRC has prohibited cash-out IPOs and overfunding. Furthermore, stock exchanges have been directed to prioritize the detection of accounting fraud during IPO reviews and to tighten supervision of information disclosure. Public funds have been encouraged to drive forward reforms by reducing commission fees for investors. In a bid to foster integrity, the CSRC has vowed to uphold a zero-tolerance stance towards corruption and enhance self-discipline within the industry. Now, when considering coffee consumption in China, Shanghai often comes to mind as the world's coffee capital, boasting a high concentration of coffee shops. In this traditionally tea-drinking country, it is fascinating to note that China has now become one of the largest consumers of coffee. Interestingly, in numerous small cities and counties across China, residents wake up to the aroma of coffee every day. Our reporter Xu Yi has discovered some intriguing stories.
In the afternoons, Weiwei's weekdays are marked by girls' parties with coffee, forming her daily routine. She is one of the local young coffee lovers of Taihe County in northwest Anhui Province. While the county is renowned for its noodles, Taihe Ban Mian, it may not be widely known as a famous location in China. However, the current scene in Taihe reveals a rise in the number of cafes, which mirrors the increasing influence of coffee culture within the region, following the footsteps of local younger coffee consumers.
This is the central zone of Taihe County, and the building behind me is the Wen Temple, the popular tourist attraction with over 700-year history. And now this place is surrounded by various stalls selling drinks and snacks, and walking along this not-so-long street, I can see at least 6 coffee shops, including beverage chains and also the independent local cafes.
Mo Shang Hua Kai, a cozy cafe adorned with flowers, has been a beloved fixture in Taihe for the past decade. In another coffee shop with just 1 year of operation, the young owner has distinguished her store as a unique and professional one. She sources high-quality coffee beans globally and personally roasts them every night, considering it the perfect time for this process. In fact, Chinese counties and small cities have emerged as the new battleground for coffee businesses. According to a report by Jingdong.com, the per capita coffee consumption growth rate in county markets in 2023, the per capita coffee consumption growth rate in county markets in 2023 was 26% higher than that in first-tier cities. In Taihe, major coffee and beverage chains, including the recently opened first ever Starbucks branch in the county, are easily accessible. This industry giant has been focusing on Chinese lower-tier cities to drive coffee market growth in recent years. According to their data, over 70% of the new cities Starbucks has entered in the past 15 months are lower-tier cities. Koti Coffee is also one of the major players.
Well, the counties hope their coffee industry can generate a buzz, but will it last long or is it just a flash in the pan? Now it's 9 a.m. in the morning, which is usually the peak time for coffee buyers in most of the big cities as they head for work. But there are not so many coffee orders you can see in Taihe County here in the morning.
And the staffs here have mentioned that they notice a gap in sales between holiday periods and regular seasons. And meanwhile, some remain a high level of optimism regarding the broader outlook. So, what is the future of coffee in the counties?
Let's just enjoy this moment of coffee and wait for the answers.
Now, for more discussions on the consumption potential in the county level areas, we're joined by Shifan Qi, assistant professor in the School of Economics at Peking University. Professor, it's good to see you. So when talking about the phenomenon of internet celebrity brands expanding into lower tier markets, what does this indicate about the consumption potential in county level areas in China?
And I'll focus on the coffee market. So regarding the observations for last year, we see there were pretty much like four phenomena. First, it's a year of coffee market expansion. For example, the Luckin Coffee increased by around 100% in terms of store branches. And the second observation is that the coffee market is kind of penetrating into these lower tier cities. And the third phenomena is that even though it penetrates to this lower tier cities, it's still center around the central and eastern China region. And the fourth phenomenon is that as the coffee market goes into these lower tier cities, we see that the profit margin of these major chain stores are actually decreasing. So regarding the consumption potential, we see that there's indeed consumption potential, but those potential mainly revolve around the vicinity of the metropolitans instead of all county levels. And second of all, their potential is still kind of limited when compared with the current consumption level in major cities.
You know, let's talk about the coffee market as well as other, you know, internet celebrity brands, which are penetrating as well to the county level areas in China. How does this reflect the untapped economic potential of China's county-level regions?
Okay, yeah, so for that, we need to first understand why these kind of celebrity brands are actually penetrating into these lower-tier cities. I guess there are two major reasons. The first reason is that because there, as is mentioned actually also in the video clip, so there is a lot of very unduly or fierce competition in the major cities. So some people are actually moving or permanently moving back to their hometown or to these lower tier cities. And because when they are either pursuing their study or actually work for a short period of time into these major cities, so they are developing these kind of habits of these kind of consumption. And the second reason is that there are also those migrant workers. So as they're exposed to these kind of, for example, coffee or other popular goods consumption, so they are family exposed as well. So that's why there's kind of potential there. And I guess there's also another often neglected fact, and that is there may also be the spillover effects. So for example, as these cities exposed to these kind of coffee or the celebrity brands consumption, maybe other even lower tier cities will be get exposed as well.
Very interesting. Thank you so much for your insights. Shifan Qi, assistant professor in the School of Economics at Peking University for us.
Here on BizTalk, we connect the dots, shedding light on the real stories behind the economic landscape. To better understand China's dynamism and the economies and rhythms of business, propelling new drivers of growth. BizTalk, your window into China and the global economy. Only on BizTalk.
Whether it's about your education, the home you live in, or the items you buy, your money has a story to tell. Because every business story is a human story. Global Business.
A key U.S. inflation gauge, the Producer Price Index, or PPI, came in hotter than expected on Thursday, spelling troubles for the Fed. Rising PPI is often considered a harbinger of increased consumer prices. And retailers' performance suggests that consumers are already responding to price hikes, despite reported growth in retail sales. Owen Fairclough breaks down the numbers.
First, international cosmetics chain The Body Shop going bankrupt and closing down all US stores. Then, discount retailer Family Dollar Tree closing 1,000 outlets. Inflation is rising again after months of decline, and the latest numbers suggest it's taking its toll on consumers and retailers. February wholesale and final demand goods price inflation rose, the latter to its highest since last September, and compounding February's core inflation that edged up to 3.2% on an annual basis. But retail sales did rise in February, though it's mainly comfort for those in transport. Higher gasoline prices and vehicle sales account for much of the extra outlay. The US Federal Reserve has been fighting inflation that hit 9.1% nearly 2 years ago by raising the interest rate that makes borrowing more expensive to dampen economic activity and price rises. It's now under pressure to cut that rate, but will likely need to consider these latest numbers as it decides on the best moment to act. Owen Fairclough, CGTN, Washington.
China's broad M2 money supply growth slowed to 8.7% by the end of February, while the outstanding yuan-denominated loans were up 10.1% compared with last year. That's according to central bank data released just moments ago. And that will do it for this edition of Global Business. I'm John Vandenberg in Beijing. Bye for now.